Are we going to start with number one?
Yeah. Yeah, please. You want to get something up? Good morning. Today is Thursday, February 15th, and it's 9 a.m., and we're convening in the Board of County Commissioners Conference Room for County Administrative Workshop. And President or Commissioner Hare, Commissioner Morgan, and Commissioner DeYoung. And item number 1A is Public Works. A1 is Public Works Fleet Update. Ted Trujillo, Fleet Program Supervisor, is here with us today, as is Rob Brandis, Director.
Good morning. Good morning.
Sorry about last time, too. Thank you for your patience.
Certainly. No worries. We'll get it done. So, as a jumping off point, we figured we'd just at least get you kind of a binder here that's got a summary of what departments have, which cars, give you a little more of the backstory and the history. Ted's got a couple of reports he's put in there as well that I think we've mentioned in terms of looking at changing our PMI schedule a bit, which is the maintenance intervals that we're doing on the cars, which we think will afford some cost savings there as well. But I think that the focus of this report is I want the board to get a sense of kind of where the fleet was, where we hope it's headed, because obviously the county was big, is now contracted, and now we're expanding a bit again. So how do we see not only just the short-term maintenance and needs and everything getting addressed, how do we longer-term address some of the systemic issues that the county fleet has kind of had? So I'll let Ted talk a bit just about some of the right now changes we're going to do in terms of just how the fleet's operating day-to-day, and then after that, I've got a couple things here I can show the board to talk a little more about how we think we're going to start steering the longer term in terms of acquisition and right-sizing the fleet, those kinds of things.
Okay. So with this list of vehicles, one of the things to note are the odometer readings, and these are the current readings for the vehicle fleet. Of concern, and this is one of the items pointed out by the management partners review, is we look at the vehicles that are in excess of 10 years of age, but less than 120,000 miles. Those are not fully paid for, in a sense, and that we have not collected the full depreciation on those. So in a sense, we're underwater on those. So just kind of keep that in note as you look through anything that is, again, over 10 years, but less than 120,000 miles. Those departments still owe us for that vehicle.
For replacement costs, because these were not all acquired the same way. I'm looking at the first two. That was a grant we did out of Economic Development, Arthur, $90,000 to buy the airport trucks.
I think more to just looking at it as an asset to where the outside, the leather inside, the whatever has worn out before the machinery has. Obviously, you know, if you got a car.
Okay, you said 100,000?
120.
Okay.
Or that we haven't captured an ability to replace that vehicle.
Right.
Correct.
Right, which gets to more, yeah, how we're going to maybe steer this in the future a bit. Because, yeah, perfect. The worst case example is the sheriff has a car with 15,000 miles, and it's a 98, I believe.
99.
So the county's probably gotten back, you know, $5,000 of depreciation, but that car's worth $1,500 sitting there. So that's the situations we're going to try and we want to avoid in the future. It's going to take a combination of a couple different things.
Just to help me out. So doesn't matter where the money came from to buy the vehicle, depreciation is still there because you are going to have to replace that vehicle,
Correct.
You may have to do that out of pocket.
There will be an expectation of that program to get another one similar to it, right?
Right. But you can't count on a grant, say, for instance, to buy two new pickups for airport. You have to figure that we are going to have to spring for two new pickups for airport at a point in time.
Correct.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, so if there's any questions on this,
do you have a scoring method? I mean, I've in my personal experience, I've got a truck that's a 1975 with 250,000 miles on it, and it's a 10. I would take it, jump in it, and drive across the United States. Mm-hmm. However, I could have my wife's car at 86,000, and it's 10 years old, and I probably wouldn't trust it to go that far. So do you have a scoring method?
We don't. I mean, the county fleet's not of a big enough size where you can identify trends to say, hey, we've got 67 Impalas. We know that they die about here. So some of it does absolutely get to be the mechanic's take as that car comes in to say, this thing really seems like it's going through water pumps, talking with the department that owns it as well. So there is probably more of that give and take than there would be with a huge fleet.
I didn't know if you had a scoring method to say, you know, you got one here, a Jeep, a 2008 Cherokee in building and safety with 180K on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not nickel diamond, you hit a death.
Right.
And could you depend? You can depend on to go anywhere in the county, but would you put an employee in it to drive to Portland?
Absolutely, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Probably not.
And so what we've done in the past was try to work more with the departments to say, you know, I think that's going to be okay, and try to keep their costs as low as possible. But I think that's come back to bite us at times. So what the new model is going to be is to hopefully squeeze them a bit more to say, it's going to cost you a bit more monthly if you want to keep that car. If the county's losing on that thing as an asset, we need to raise the rate a bit to induce them to say, yeah, maybe we don't need six cars. Maybe we can get away with five and get rid of some of those that aren't driving as much. Or maybe we can give that person a per diem once a month if they need that car to go to sale. But there's no reason to have it sitting in your lot the other 29 days, those kinds of things. And we'll talk about that change in methodology.
Okay, good.
Well, and I know in Community Corrections, they have one cage car. And they leave that one there for transport, so one person can transport, because otherwise it takes two people to transport.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's low mileage, and it's 10 years old, but...
There's some program-specific ones, for sure. And we're going to look at some options to hopefully even have some more interdepartmental sharing. So it could be, if we can, is there a way that Community Corrections can schedule to say, hey, we need that every Monday, and Jim says, I need that every Friday. Those kind. We're going to look for some more of those, hopefully, sharing opportunities as well. But there are program-specific ones that you got to have. Yeah.
Okay. The motor pool element, I like that idea of trying to divest ourselves of those that are just sitting there, and you can assign the cost specifically to a program that uses it once a month, and they just go up to Enterprise, and they jump in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's harder to assign, you know, if Parks treats their truck really, really well or really, really poorly, they pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have departments sharing motor pool vehicles, you don't know where those costs are coming from or how they're being used. But it doesn't matter if they're jumping in a car that we're only responsible for the 2 days they're using it, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like if that's a method that we could...
We're certainly looking at that. We do have the Enterprise account is set up through Orpen, so that is available to county departments. It's an actual rental.
What we're going to roll out to departments this year is basically to show them a potential option, say, here's what it will cost to keep that car as a county car, your minimum monthly charges. Here's what it would cost if you go to Enterprise once a month, twice a month, whatever. Here's what it would cost for that federal reimbursement. So they can make an internal decision to say, hey, I get that car four times a month for 25 miles. Which version of that, getting that car for my employee, is the best?
Mm-hmm.
Put more of that decision-making process back in their hands.
Okay, then after the vehicle list, we have a spreadsheet showing trends in the depreciation fund and mileage from fiscal year 9-10 and then through a projection for 18-19.
Can I ask a question
before you go on?
Sheriff, with him acquiring vehicles outside of the traditional means, are you guys still the ones accumulating cost accrual, charging mileage, and doing maintenance?
If it's an add, then the program pays for it, but it comes into the county fleet, and then it would be charged as O&M as another vehicle that you own. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
So then the next spreadsheet is showing depreciation collected through... the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, was that 10 fiscal years? And then mileage and the vehicle count.
And the big takeaway there is obviously the 13, 14, 14, 15 fiscal years where there was a decision to not charge depreciation. There's some small amounts you'll see there. That was a couple of grant-funded vehicles that had to have it continuing, a couple of transit, the economic development trucks you just mentioned, Commissioner. But for all intents and purposes, depreciation was zero those two fiscal years. So longer, bigger picture, you know, the fund is probably $400,000 below where it would have been in absence of that, or whatever you want to look at it, or 15 vehicles short of where it would have been. So that's the hole we're looking at, how do we get out of. And as far as mileage trends, you can see we did bottom out about those 2 years. Now things are back up on the upswing, almost about back to the peak at this point. Vehicle count has gone down, which is good. That tells me the average miles per vehicle is gradually going up. I think still not quite as high as we would like to see it, but it's gotten better. And I think by squeezing them with minimum mileage, we'll probably get a few more turns back in.
Mm-hmm. In business, I've heard of companies that went to vehicle tracking
mm-hmm.
and cut down their mileage dramatically. you know, to basically GPS every foot of, I think it was Cormark when the new guy took over for Cormark. He issued all his sales on a brand new phone. They go, hey, great. And 2 months later, he says, you stop at the bar way too often because the phone was a tracking device. And I don't know about the legality of doing that without letting them know that they're being tracked, but there, it was a real eye-opener.
You do that in a couple programs. Mm-hmm.
So we had looked at the Verizon program because it looked at not only you can put in, all right, these are all the stops I need to go to the best route for cost, but it also is looking on who's driving like a bat out of somewhere versus, you know, being in a, you know, responsible driver and stuff like that. So
if it was done, it would be purely from a standpoint of, seeing where folks are going. We've got the odometers get put in when folks go to the gas pump each time they fill up. So that's how we're assured that we're getting the correct costs put in. We're not really seeing evidence of cars being abused in terms of, driving too fast and wearing out brakes inordinately. If they are, we have a discussion with the program person. But, you know, there's nothing saying that, that those couldn't be installed on all cars.
That's
I would leave that as a board, board slash department
that's
decision.
A manager board kind of conversation.
And all of our vehicles are identified as county vehicles?
No.
So, should be, but they're not. Our board van, Jeep, doesn't have decals.
I understand that, but I mean, for the most part, like in Public Works, you have decals on the side of your.
Most of them do.
There's a couple strays, a few.
I noticed when you letter a van in the private sector, people have truck number 3. I'm sitting right behind it.
Yeah,
all those. They can call it in. So it's pretty,
with the exception of a few undercover cars for obvious reasons, and like I said, the commissioners, and there may be one other spray, they're all badged.
Not very many.
Okay. Any other questions?
So you're... Okay, I just haven't looked at your proposal at the back yet, so we'll look at that.
The next page is, I wanted to... just include our task list for PM, preventive maintenance. When a vehicle comes in, these are the services that we provide. And just so you have kind of a sense of what we would do compared to the private sector. And what we're saying is that we're doing a much more thorough safety inspection than you would get if you were to go to Camp Henry's or somebody of that nature.
And the other thing that's baked into our PMI charges is the valet service, if you will. So if a department has a vehicle that needs to come in for an oil change, we're sending a car up to get theirs and bring it back down. It doesn't have to be that way, but that, to this point, the departments have all indicated that's the model they would like to follow, as opposed to having, you know, a sheriff's deputy come down and sit at Public Works waiting for an hour while his car is serviced.
I think that's a good idea because it keeps people in their workspace.
Yes.
That's been the department's opinion as well. So short of a widespread, hey, we really want to come down there and hang out, then I would not propose changing that model of us doing the valet service to get their cars to them and back from them. And with fewer PMIs coming up anyway, it won't be happening as often anyway. So
I've been stranded in your parking lot for a while waiting for a ride to pick me up.
Was it a motor pool car or department owned?
Department. I mean, called to turn it in for maintenance and so you guys doing valet, that's neat to know because it wasn't there when I was doing it.
Should have been.
No, it was. We'd get a call on your voicemail saying your car's ready to be turned. We need it for maintenance, and we'd have to go drop it off and get a ride.
Since I've been here, that service has been provided, so I can't speak to prior to my big terminology.
We may have picked on you probably. I don't know.
No, that was frequently, and we would just go right up on the board. This one's at Fleet, but last couple of years they might have started coming picking them up, but
we've tried to. We heard overwhelmingly from the departments we'd rather keep our folks on task with their jobs as opposed to waiting on a car. So that seems to be the consensus.
You ever seen the movie?
That's how I got to know all your guys. I was waiting for a ride.
Have you seen the movie Gone in 60 Seconds? There's a valet aspect to that's just hilarious. Don't get caught up. I'm not even going to describe it. Cause it's
so I get my car obviously serviced not at Fleet.
Yep.
They do everything that is listed here, minus the check first aid kit, check fire extinguisher, check a certificate of self-insurance for the vehicle, accident packet and vehicle. It's just they do everything else here. They check the engine belts. They'll rotate the tires if necessary. Steerage linkage. What is it that's different? And I'm not being critical, but I don't want to be you know, that's the same list that I get, and I can go down to, you know, any of the places, and I think that's the same list that I'm expecting to be done, minus the stuff at the bottom, which...
Well, let's take a look at the brake lining check. That's a wheel-off service that we provide.
Oh, okay. That's...
It's a very thorough, the wheels come off, and we do that.
Okay, that would be more
It's a more thorough service.
But is that necessary every oil change? Because it should be, like, brakes should have an expectation
with
to
like
last.
With a patrol vehicle, absolutely.
Absolutely.
With a transit vehicle, yeah, absolutely. They can see a lot of change between in 3,000, 4,000 miles.
Okay.
Yeah, hard driving.
And another aspect of this is we are maintaining the public transit fleet, and we have...
Yeah, that one I take completely separate. Those buses are different. They're $250,000 vehicles. I'm not suggesting that we take that.
Right,
are different.
Okay. Or people.
Yeah,
right.
That's not...
We should be doing as thorough a job on those for... Yeah, that's unsaid.
Those are federal requirements.
Yeah. Right. It's a standardized... PMI, we could certainly look at saying, do we need to check
great
kinds of things
on it? Sure.
Like,
you know, if you guys are charging, this is what I've heard from some of the programs over the 8 years, that, wait a second, this list is very similar to what I get, and I get charged $29, $39.99 or whatever for it, and I don't know what you guys charge for an oil change, but it just, and then there's the time element. You know,
yeah.
I've got a staff person
waiting for
the 20 minutes
right.
when they do a drive up or whatever. I don't know how that all works out, but I want to compare apples and apples.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to assume
mm-hmm.
that we're not, you know, doing something. That's just really key.
Because
then it's defensible, and we're saying, no,
right.
we've done that evaluation, and it is what it is. And you're paying $30 more, so you don't have to go blah, 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 sit in line.
Right.
Okay, so wait a second. That person's sitting in line for 25, 30 minutes. Their salary is X, $30, that's a wash.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
mm-hmm.
no, that's cost effective. That's all I want to say,
mm-hmm.
is I don't want to just have it any other way than apples and apples.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. The best comparisons we can see, you know, the days of the $39 oil change are debatable. If you're putting in synthetic, it's
right.
probably closer to, what, $70 or $80 oil change. And quite frankly, if you go down to one of the local vendors there, you're potentially getting a 19-year-old kid out of high school versus we've got guys with 15 years of experience in ASC certifications. So you do get into that trade-off of what are you gaining by that.
If you indeed do all of the things that are on here, and there's stuff that they're not going to check down at Jiffy Lube or wherever, like the reflectors, is accident packet in the vehicle, is certificate of insurance in the vehicle, fire extinguisher, first aid kit, change service due sticker, so on and so on and so on. They are not...
Those are once a year anyhow.
You couldn't do all of this in an hour and a half. I've been in that business too long.
I don't want to disagree with you, but
yeah.
it just, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not. Those things at the end, the person who's driving it should be responsible for making sure that those stuff, the fire extinguisher works and the first aid kit's in there. I'm okay with that.
We do vehicle checks, and those are something that we've had fleet call and say, can you verify these are in your car? And we've gone through and checked all the vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
We also, in our situation, had CPR masks in mm-hmm. each of the vehicles, assigned to a vehicle. So if something were to happen in the field, you have the kind that attach to the EMS ones and all that kind of stuff. But
I don't want to nickel and dime this either. I mean,
sure,
it is what it is, and you depreciate it over.
I've
never had an oil change that's other than my BMW that's taken an hour and a half, and they do every single thing that's on this list every single time. So I just...
I've never had a BMW, so I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
But
that takes all day.
Clean terminals and load test on the battery. I was at a local drive-thru. And the guy came out, and I was in the waiting room. He says, $10 to clean your battery post. I said, sure, go ahead. I mean, everything was an add-on that would be normally used.
Right.
Dump the oil, put a new filter on, put the oil back in, is $29.95, and then it goes up from there. But so I said, sure, fine, go ahead. I was on my way to see my sister in Portland, who was on her deathbed, and I get to Roseburg, and my light comes on. Says, hey, stop this car. So I pull over. Then I shut it off. I read through all the things. It says the battery's bad. And I thought, well, I'm going to stop and buy a battery in Roseburg then or wherever I get to. I get up there. They don't sell batteries. I get a look again, and I said, it says, you know what? I said, I'm going to clean the battery post. So I took my battery thing apart and I cleaned my battery posts and put them back on. They had not cleaned them. They charged me $10. And so I went on and saw my sister, luckily, because that was the last time I ever saw her. I came back and I went down there and I said, you know, I was on my way to Fort to see my sister. And my car quit because the battery posts weren't clean. I said, and you charged me $10 to clean the battery post. And you know what I got? Hey, we don't take those things off. We just squirt some fluid off. I said, you don't take the battery cables off and clean the post? Nope. Because if we did, we'd have to reset your radio for you. End of conversation. So that is not adequate in some places, whereas here I think it would be. I'm not defending either way. I just think that there's an awful lot going on here, and I like the brake lining check that you won't get at the drive-through.
I think to Commissioner Harris' point, though, I would certainly, I think we could take a look at saying on an assessor's rig that's an in-town, lower use, do we need to rotate tires, check brake linings every single time? Mm-hmm. I think you could look at two different tiers of here's an annual,
if you're charging them for a standard, whatever it is, if you're not going to adjust the rate, then you need to do it.
Well, it's a blended rate, effectively, though, too, so it's across the class.
Okay.
It's a good point. I think we could look at saying there's two tiers of PMIs to, have an annual and a...
Maybe you have a cafeteria plan where, I did these things, and this is what it costs to do each one of those items. I don't know.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll take a look at that.
Okay. Any other concerns from commissioners?
Okay. And then these are the changes, the last pages. We have made changes to the preventive maintenance mileage intervals. When I came on board, I found we were still adhering to basically the 3,000-mile interval, which with today's cars is too aggressive.
Well, how accurate are people coming in at 3,000 miles? I mean,
pretty close, within a tank of gas, typically, because once they upload their odometer, our system will ping us and say, hey, that person just hit 32,000 miles.
Okay. Get it.
And they're coming in still in the cars, so no one has a say.
Right.
Oh.
That's right.
Yeah, ours doesn't operate that way. We don't use the card lock all that often. At least I didn't. And I put more miles on that Jeep than anybody. So
hopefully it's your handwriting on the Chevron slip, so at least catch it there, an odometer. We're going to have to come take your car.
You can take it anytime. I don't use it anymore.
So this is our new schedule.
Well, that sounds reasonable. I think if you're putting in synthetic also...
We are starting.
It would be uncommon. We would miss more than one tank fill up, so 300, 350 miles.
Sounds good.
So, the final page, we believe that we'll have an annualized savings by changing the schedule of somewhere around $21,000.
So, now, told you all that so we can tell you this. So, here's the bigger takeaway. So, as you've heard, we are in the process of working with Enterprise, they approached us with a potential lease option for the county fleet. What that entails effectively selling off the county fleet over time, or at least the 84 vehicles they've identified as making sense potentially. These are sedans and pickups, not things like patrol vehicles, transit vehicles, that sort of thing. The premise being that as you rotate to newer cars, your maintenance goes down, the county's not buying cars, you're getting a gradually newer fleet. Sounds all good. And so we've had a couple meetings. So I draw your attention to the right side there where they show this annual sustainable savings of about $26,000. That sounded great. I'm still interested at this point. A couple things, though, as we've dug further into their numbers that have been done. So they presume that as we acquire new vehicles leased through them, that they would get 100% of the CAFE standards on mileage, which isn't going to happen. It's going to be whatever. If we're getting 70% of CAFE now, we're going to get 70% of those new CAFE because a forestry truck, a parks truck is doing a lot of idle time and all that thing. So we pull out what we know will happen with the gas mileage. The other thing was working in Ted's revised PMI schedule savings. You take those two things out, the annual sustainable savings actually goes negative by about $5,000. Call it even just for the sake of argument. So we're kind of comparing apples to apples. Is everybody tracking at that point? Okay. So the next thing I did was brought along spreadsheets. I know I blow it. This is the bottom one, of course. So this spreadsheet on the left-hand side is this, I've recreated the this is the Enterprise sheet. This is their number on the left-hand side, left of the heavy black line there. And what you'll see there, I've just used the first 5 years for an example. So if you, in that lease column there, you total those up. So Josephine County would make about $1.1 million of lease payments over those 5 years for Enterprise to provide us what they said was they picked the 84 cars that were the worst offenders, easiest to roll over, whatever you want to call it. That was to get those cars leased. But as we all know, so if we lease those cars and the county disappears tomorrow, what do we get for those cars? Zero, right? We turn them back in, so there's no value to those. We've paid $1.1 million and we owned nothing. So the flip side, we said, so what if we instead buy those cars internally, start turning over cars faster so they've got a better residual value, and we know that they've got a book value because they're newer. So the right-hand side was just me using Enterprise's proposed replacement cycle. So that expended life today column, that's just us buying cars that they're on their presumed numbers, 26 the first year, 11 the next year, 7 the next year. What's the cost of that? The next column is book value, so that's what those cars are worth, even with an aggressive depreciation schedule. We're depreciating them like 10% a year. And then that last column, resale to date, you'll see there then like $351,000 kicks in. That would be us going to a policy of selling those cars at 5 years. And what kind of, the other thing that drew a light to this was that recent building safety van or Jeep that was wrecked, and that got like $11,000 of salvage value. I said, my goodness. There's a potential savings there for the county. So taking all those things together, really we're looking at how much we've paid for cars, what's the book value sitting out in the parking lot, what are we potentially getting to resell them. So then those bottom two yellowed columns there, so under the Enterprise lease, we would be spending about $1.1 million the first 5 years. If this is kept internal, the county keeps buying its own cars, reselling its own cars, our total acquisition cost is at $329,000. So even if we want to quibble about assumptions 10% one way or another, I'm showing about an $800,000 savings by keeping it in-house as opposed to going to Enterprise.
If you go to an aggressive turnover rate where you're not keeping them
correct.
So long.
Correct.
Which means your maintenance costs would be less anyhow potentially correct. Because you're not ever getting to the point that warranties are wearing off or the higher mileage.
Right. So right. we're grinding through the last of the numbers, but we feel that going to a more aggressive schedule, especially with the resale values, lower PMIs, that we can keep departments, depreciation, lease, whatever you want to call those costs, very close to zero, and the upshot is there's going to be a far newer fleet out there over the next couple of years. So I'm hoping to come back to a proposal to the three of you in the next week or two. It's tough timing budget-wise, but if we can potentially do this, it looks to me like it makes financial sense. I think it kind of goes along with the county wanting to prevent a newer, shinier image as well, that we're not driving around in 20-year-old cars. There's something to that.
Can you, if you look at depreciation on an automobile, like you drive it off the showroom floor and you're going to lose, in the first 2 years of that car being on the road, it costs almost $1 a mile
mm-hmm.
for that person to own that car in the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's year three, then it's 50 cents a mile, then it's 25 cents a mile. So you get down here to 5 years and you have a vehicle that you say, hey, I'm not going to roll that out. Because it's at the end of 5 years, it's pretty well down there.
Mm-hmm.
Year 5 through 10, you lose very little value. In other words, you don't drop off, continue to drop off. It tables out at about 5 years. And the next 5 years, you're picking yourself back up with your depreciation schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So can you have a these are high-use vehicles, we're going to cycle those out of 5 years, mm-hmm. but these other ones we're going to leave in for 10 years
mm-hmm.
and go from there. There would be potential savings there in that 5 through 10 year, I would think.
Yeah, and the other kind of break point.
You wouldn't have that because over here, they're going to take them all out of 5 years, and in the next 5 years, you're going to do this all over again.
Right.
But that's what we're at right now. It's a 10-year cycle.
Right. Well, we've got some vehicles on here that are way over 10 years.
True, but for the most part.
Kind of the industry standard to break point, they would say, is cars like a half-ton truck and smaller, you should be cycling more often, and the three-quarter tons and up right until they die. That's effectively the ones that are going to be just more beefy, parks, the forestries, and they're going to do okay for 10, 12, 14 years. So again, it looks like the numbers will pencil out. We're going to have one more meeting with Enterprise tomorrow morning
right.
to see if they've got a last best offer. I don't see theirs being coming to fruition from that respect.
I've never felt confident about the Enterprise thing holistically, but there is an element that it needs to be integrated into the portfolio. So whatever it is, from my perspective, you have to integrate it into somehow. There is. Inefficiencies with having our motor pools sit there, these other cars in
yes.
the fleet sit there
right.
as much as they do, and there's these occasional uses, and you know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So those ones need to go away, and they need to go to enterprise and make them work.
Yeah, you're talking the rental aspect.
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But them being our quasi-fleet, blah, 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 no, it's never felt that there's no way to make that pencil.
Mm-mm.
There's it's arbitrage. Somebody in the middle is making something.
Mm-hmm. A lot.
Of something.
Yeah.
And there shouldn't be a margin there.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that
mm-hmm.
internally.
Mm-hmm.
So cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only place where it makes sense is those occasional uses, in my opinion.
Yep, yep.
And you you dissolve, dilute the efficiencies if you reduce your internal fleet. So when you have mechanics, four of them, working on 100 vehicles, and you reduce that in half, it doesn't make sense to have four anymore, but you still need people to have expertise amongst those 50 remaining,
mm-hmm.
and how do you get away with less?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense
mm-hmm.
in my mind. It
mm-hmm.
never has, but we had to explore it. So I appreciate
mm-hmm.
you doing all of this. I think that there's probably a margin of error of probably 25% with this. It still doesn't make fiscal sense
yep.
in my mind. So I don't need to be convinced on
yeah.
the fiscal element.
Well, and the other thing we have in our favor, too, is that we're able to buy off of the state bid. So we say 15-20% right out of the gate. So instead of that new Jeep Cherokee being $33,000, it's $27,000. So we've already dodged a lot of that, drive it off the lot, 20%. So, yeah, I'm...
The other thing has been, fundamentally, since I've been here, it's not the way I keep a car. You either keep a car till it dies, or you figure out there's a breaking point
mm-hmm.
of depreciation,
mm-hmm.
and you get rid of it at a highest point of
yeah.
residual value.
Before it cams over.
Before
mm-hmm.
it totally tanks and there's nothing of value
mm-hmm.
there. And if you're buying it at cheaper and you're selling it quicker where there's residual value, that's the ideal. But you have to pick one.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't be jumping around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after 2013, 12, 13, 14, we've gotten ourselves to a place right now to pick one
mm-hmm.
and develop a good philosophy, policies around it, and that's what we do.
Yeah.
I don't mind... figuring out if for parks they want to elect to be out of it, we've got it. Once you're out, you're out. You're not in anymore. But if they want to say, you know, I've done the math and fiscally, it just makes more sense for me to get my oil changes done at Jiffy Lube because I'm paying a guy $12.99, you know, $12.50 an hour to sit there for 25, 30 minutes. And all they do is run around. They're not high demand. If they break down, there's another guy
mm-hmm.
down at the other park. You know, whatever.
They're not going long ways. You're not going to be on stuck at a rest area in Oregon City.
No, everything is within, you know,
their phone call away.
1,600 square miles that we have here, and probably a lot lesser of a footprint. And the vitalness, if they don't get out there and they have to use a different vehicle in their fleet, I don't know. That's just my philosophy. If there's one who wants to do that, sheriff can't elect to do that. Public Works can't elect to do that. Transit can't elect to do that. There are some, I think, within our fleet that should be given maybe an option, but it has to be defined that if you're hitching your wagon to that star, that's it.
If you can't get a hold of your guy, don't call our guy.
Nope.
So and there's obviously a risk management piece to that as well. The county would have to have some pretty strong boilerplates because it's still going to be a county vehicle and you'd want some sort of proof to say that thing's being safely maintained.
There is that.
On your list of motor pool vehicles, they didn't necessarily look, they almost look like leftovers,
mm-hmm.
vehicles you kind of just
yeah.
ended up.
Mm-hmm.
Other agencies and departments, when I was in the university, I ran our motor pool department. And
mm-hmm.
we had the things that we used most, we had a couple cars, we had 15 passenger vans. Departments would check those out, and if they weren't available, they'd go rent a car.
Mm-hmm.
The city does that,
mm-hmm.
where they have... I don't know, about six Priuses or something like that, that they're available for local or department travel and such like that. They get checked out through the admin department.
Yep.
And if it's not available, then they go to enterprise. We don't have a motor pool class to handle something like that. Would that be cost efficient?
Yep, that was our next point, yeah. So we are looking at doing something like that, presumably located at the courthouse. That's as central as we can get. Could be that if IT wants one, they're going to have to walk a block or two, but you have to look at a smaller motor pool that stays here some kind of a checkout system.
Well, and then maybe assessors don't need a car.
Correct.
They can check out the car as needed on, or not everybody in assessor. If the person's going to the field every day, they need a car.
Yep. Yep.
If it's once a week or once a month, why do they need a car?
Exactly. And that would be, that's could definitely be a part of the proposal as it comes out. We've looked at that to say, do we put 4, 5, 6 cars out here? Mostly sedans, but yeah, a stray van and a stray 4x4, something like that, yeah. So we're going to roll that into it, and the other part we're looking at is how do what's the checkout system look like. The automated ones are all fine and good, but they're painfully expensive.
Right.
You know, electronic system, but we'll see if we can't figure out a way to put it on the county webpage or something like that where you go and you just click and say, hey, I need that vehicle that day from 10 to 4. So, yeah, that is absolutely intended as part of this package.
Like drop of blood that you know. I'm just kidding.
Right. Retinal scan. Yeah, that sounds fair.
Who's responsible for the vehicle?
You're on DNA. Okay. Anything else?
Just the last piece, and keep in mind the county fleet. We're projecting a year end balance of about $145,000. I've talked with Art. That's not going to buy many cars. Obviously, I've talked with Lori, we've got a projected balance in the O&M of about $280,000. I think we could transfer some money out of that. I got to double check with Arthur that that's permissible, but if we transfer it out of there, you know, we get up to $300,350. Projected depreciation payments coming in next year about $220,000. So, you know, we're somewhere over $500,000. So I think we could quickly roll in 20 to 25 cars, but I need to check on Arthur on a couple of those things. But I think this, if that's the case, this could happen fairly quickly. Could be a big auction of county cars.
Any other questions from commissioners?
No, I think that's good.
Commissioner Morgan?
Okay.
Thank you.
Good.
Cool. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Just real quick, was there any specific recommendations? I can't remember out of that review that we had.
One of them, they specifically called out, they said they would not lease. It was kind of, I'd forgotten all about that, and Ted found it again the other day. I said, oh, there it is in black and white. But they did talk about, yeah, reducing the PMI schedules and... not specifically how it called it out, but for the idea, again, of squeezing, you know, to get fewer cars driving more.
What is your way of interacting with the programs to check in how they're receiving your program and how they feel about...
We're going to do a...
survey?
Yeah, every year when the motor pool memo goes out, we ask for input at that point. Don't typically get much, but we're going to have an actual survey that goes out this spring with budget to formally say, hey, what do you want? And then I want to look at having a vehicle input committee that meets every quarter. You know, obviously Sheriff is going to be on there. Scott's going to be on there with his buses. Hopefully get one or two others that just come out and talk about what's working, what's not. So, yeah, vehicle advisory committee.
What I don't like, Rob, is honestly there are grumblings that don't translate to you, and then you don't have an opportunity to answer them in an effective way that says, I hear what you're saying. It shouldn't be XYZ for replacing windshield wipers. Or here's why it is what it is. And if you want to do something different, what are you suggesting? And we'll work it out, whether or not that's going to work out or it isn't. You know what I mean? We have to address those grumblings. And I think you want to. And I think you can. We just have to do that.
Yeah, and a lot of times it ends up being, it doesn't get any further than the mechanic. Somebody pulls in with their rig and they tell the mechanic, hey, such and such is rattle, and the mechanic says, I test that thing, I'm not hearing it, and yeah.
Or why is it consistently not getting fixed?
Right.
I hear it, or something. I don't know. There's there's stuff.
We'll go to, do you have a flat rate manual that you use for charging? Like, say, someone comes in for windshield wipers, and is it done by the hour, how long it takes to change a wiper, or do you say it's $35 to change wipers?
It's covered under their O&M rate. We can track it internally in terms of what the actual cost is to do that based on the shop rate in our cost accounting system, but there's no charge to the department coming in and having that would be covered under their O&M rate that they pay.
Okay.
It's a cost sharing. It's a pool. So, in other words, internally we're tracking the mechanic's time and the materials, but it all goes into a pool for a class of vehicle. And then the departments share in that total cost.
So in other words, to change wipers for Parks Department is exactly to change wipers for the Sheriff's Department.
Right. The theory being, if somebody gets stuck with a lemon, they don't get penalized. You know, two guys get us the same Cherokee, and one department works great, the other one keeps coming in over and over again. They shouldn't be penalized. You blend that
in the flat rate system. In the flat rate system, it's always higher, but it's always covered. Some wipers, you can just go in, quick, zap, zap, and they're done, and then the guy's gone. I've had some cars that it's a couple hours to change wiper blades on. They're hidden and this, that, and the other thing. So I just didn't know if it was amortized out over the long haul.
Yep.
Which it sounds like, kind of like it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions for fleet manager?
I don't think so.
Thank you very much. Thanks
cool.
for keeping
Thank
us
you.
Posted on everything that's going on out of the fleet.
This one will be shorter.
Okay.
That's next, isn't it?
Let's see where we're at next here on our schedule of events. I want to do that. There it is, right there. Okay, next one up is item 1A2, which is order number 2018-006 in the matter of installing two stop signs on Ridgefield Road. Rob?
That's about the long and the short of it. We've got a...
is this a new subdivision?
The Golden Heights subdivision, yep. Recently completed, and effectively what we do is just at the start of this, we have the contractor secure for two stop signs, which they did, and now that the project is nearing completion, we will go out and put them in.
I see on the deal that there's no cost. Is that the developer has to pay for the...
Developer pays for it, right. They secure for them up front.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
That leads into the conversation that I think I brought up at least a year or two ago. Douglas County has a policy now that they don't accept new roads into their portfolio. We don't accept a lot of roads.
We don't accept a lot, right.
But,
right.
Is there any fiscal advantage that you can see? I mean, we've got 560, 580 miles of roads, and we have... even with this new transportation package, I still don't see us having the capacity to maintain them at the level that you want to. And it may or may not get a whole lot better in the next decade.
Right.
So is there an advantage to saying, you can build them, this is our standard, you variance from this, but we're just not going to accept any more roads. Now, Douglas County's three times the size of Josephine
mm-hmm.
County, and they're at a negative population growth or flat.
Yeah.
You know, but ours is not, and I can see us having potential new developments and
right.
stuff. So.
Right. For limited residential, rural residential, the new ones we're seeing, the annual maintenance cost is pretty low. We would obviously save money by saying, yeah, we're not going to do this anymore, but the flip side being that I'm guessing that the board would certainly hear from the development community, from the economic development side of it, just folks saying, hey, we don't, we want that road to county standard.
Well, sure, you want it, but you set up a private
They could be set up as private
of,
roads. Absolutely could.
Of maintenance.
Sure.
And those who are utilizing it are all... getting into a cooperative agreement
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or,
Sure. And, I mean, you've been here long enough, you've seen, the private drives don't work as smoothly. There are eventually issues. The 3-mil road would be like the extreme example, but there's obviously the issues as time wears on and how far down the road you start hearing those complaints about, hey, I can't get everybody to put in to fix these potholes. I don't know. But that's the trade-off for the board.
If when you get to like this, you get to this plan unit development, and the developer says this is what I want to do, and he lays all the streets out of how he wants it and whatnot, and then we go in and say, well, we got to have curb, gutter, sidewalk, bike lane, multimodal path, so on and so forth, up to county standards, then we would take that over. But if he says, I don't need any of that in my plan unit development,
mm-hmm.
I need road, I need a street, and curbs and gutters, I don't need sidewalks, I don't need. But then he agrees that from that day forward, it's his baby. That, 20 years from now, potholes start to arise, it's up to the planned unit development to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
That we don't take that in.
It'd be like an HOA.
Yeah, exactly.
Was probably a
yeah.
public works.
Gated communities
mm-hmm.
down in Southern California. There aren't three lanes with a turn-only lane and so on and so forth because that's national standards or ODOT standards or whatever. You just let them be... No, you can do what you want inside that thing, but it's your baby.
Right.
That's the trade-off.
Right.
Is there anything in the works that can do that? Is there an option that they can do that?
They can do it as it is now. They're just limited in the number of lots they can put on it. It gets to be back to land use and fire and everything else.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if we go in there and say, no, we have to build this to county standards, which, all of a sudden the culvert becomes the Golden Gate Bridge, and so on and so forth, if they can avoid that, is that something that can happen?
It's limited by the number of lot sizes. Yeah, they can do that up to a certain number of lots. Above that, it would have to become a county road, and that's a land use type decision.
I think there's a sweet spot there, potentially, just to be explored.
Yeah.
And all I like the fleet conversation about whatever. Just want to talk about it and say that we've arrived at the sweet spot because we've addressed it. And it's on the record, you know, that we looked into this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where is that?
Well, I know that
we have the discretion over the RLDC to say, you know, 10 lots or whatever. I don't know that that's a state standard that's mandating, you know, a county road standard based on six lots. It's probably an RLDC element, and we've inherited that from times when we had plenty of money through secure rural schools or Forest Service shared receipts and all that stuff. And the new reality is that what we have right now in public works is probably the best fiscal situation we're going to have for a while. So we've adjusted policies to account for that. I just want to make sure.
Last winter when we had the big rainstorm situation out there in off of Pickett Creek, mm-hmm. where it was a plat of, you know, they basically deeded, I guess, to the county all of these different streets that never developed. It mm-hmm. never happened. And, of course, the culvert washed out, and they called the county and said, well, that's yours. And it was never accepted. We had to go back through the paperwork, mm-hmm. and it was never accepted into the county road system because they never brought it up to county standard. And so, therefore, you know, we just had to wash our hands of it, and nobody was happy about that. But
I'm going to play devil's advocate here as far as the policy change. And we know that some of rural Oregon were concerned about the transportation taxes and such because they live so far away from a city that they're spending more in mileage necessarily to get to a location. We have rural parts of our county that may not have a lot of people traveling on it, but they're spending more per mileage to get mm-hmm. there. And so in the grand scheme of things, we're paying more towards our transportation costs through the gas and everything else, yet in turn are not going to be getting the services of the taxes they're paying. And so which citizens are we deciding, hey, you're going to pay the taxes but get the service, but you're going to pay the taxes and not get the service? And, you know, if anyone else goes on that road, the damage that may come to a vehicle from traveling on the road or anything else, at some level, it may be that we just say, no, this is the standard that the roads are, and since everybody's paying into it equally, we maintain them equally. But I think that it's not just such an easy question to say, we're not going to accept any more roads no matter what.
It's actually a fairly easy conversation to have. You just say that you're not going to do it anymore and that you're not going to be maintaining the portfolio. You don't have the resources within Public Works to do it now. And we're kicking the can down the road by not maintaining all of the infrastructure at a set standard. And so everything is getting degraded as opposed to saying, no, we're going to say that we're going to divest ourselves of 100 miles of roads. Klamath County doesn't have every road paved in all of their portfolio. Neither does Douglas. They just say that this is what we can afford to maintain at the level we need to maintain it at, and that's what it's going to look like. And I'm just saying that we need to have that conversation. I'm not saying that it's going to change at all. Mm-hmm. But we have not had that conversation, I would say, in probably 20 years. And your ability, I hate the expectation, Rob, that this board, the next board, and future boards are going to say, we want you to blah, 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 maintain this 580 miles of roads at our current standard. Oh, and by the way, you have half the money that you used to have to do it.
Right.
The reality is you don't.
The TSP would be the primary vehicle for that. And it is talked about in the 2003, so now that the update's coming along, it'll be addressed again.
Perfect.
Would it be helpful in the interim for the board to see costs per mile on maintaining various classes of roads? Because really that's what we're talking about. We're not putting in new azaleas or upper river roads. We're putting in new rural residential, limited residential. Would that be useful?
I think what you presented at the state of the county had information in there that I was not aware
of. Because these are low bore roads in terms of maintenance cost. I think if we're going to head down this path, the better argument may be to say the board is interested in doing this to save the development cost of that road being a full county standards. Now you're going to get a pushback from fire and things like that, but that may be a stronger argument because.
But you can set a minimum. You could say, okay,
sure.
We don't want you to full blown county expectations, but this is the minimum. And safety being one of them.
Yeah, that's basically what I mean. A limited residential, that's what it is. I mean, it's just your subgrade. It's, you know, 2 inches of asphalt and a minimum width. There's nothing else on there that's
a huge, arduous requirement.
Right, right.
But I'm looking at Tyser Crossing. And that situation, that road is probably not being, it's going to cost us.
Mm-hmm.
And, It should, we're not, they're not paying for it. That gas tax dollars that come in as a result of that mile and a half of road,
sure,
is just, it's, you're losing money, mm-hmm, every time you accept one of these things.
Well,
it doesn't matter what standard you put on it. It's just the reality of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the idea that we're throwing more into the portfolio and there's a less,
and less money,
diminishing capacity to pay for the maintenance on it. So,
well, you know, the Origo, or not tried the Origo program that they, you know, a year, it was a dismal failure, you know, like getting people to voluntarily say how many miles they drove and where they were going, I mean, because it had a big brother aspect to it. But, you know, to Commissioner Morgan's argument about the people that drive farther and they pay more at the pump, what about the guy out there that has a Tesla or a Prius that gets 60 miles to the gallon, and he's only spent...
I make up for it by driving more miles.
Oh, I forgot.
Or having a lighter vehicle.
But then, you know, we can have this argument all day long.
We should probably have as part of the TSP. Mm-hmm. That's all.
But yeah.
Well, and if there are recommendations of roads that need to maybe go back to gravel, that can, that are safe, that they don't have a slope on them that's going to wash out, or there's something else, have that conversation. But I don't want it to just be that we say, well, we can't afford anymore, so we're just going to make a blanket policy without looking at what is that really
entail. Alternatives. Maybe alternatives.
Correct.
Is what you're classifying.
And I'm kind of, I think I'm hearing two different paths here, too. One would be not accepting any others, and the other would be the argument, are we going to then stop maintaining or let certain ones revert back to gravel? I think there's two separate pieces
you
there
guys
that
are,
we want to
you
scope
guys are
them out.
Debating solutions.
Yeah.
I'm not saying there's a solution. I'm saying the conversation needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's all. I gave an example of what other counties are doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another thing that we really need to, that comes into the mix at some point in time, is that we have a housing shortage, and the more we add on to the development costs, before you know it, you're not having developers want to participate because it gets so far out of hand that it's off the map. So anyway,
so maybe it would be worth at some point having an inventory of recommendations. Of this is maintainable, this is not, this is what can happen here, this can lower the cost there.
And the, yeah, the TSP will model a lot of that in terms of doing 20-year revenue forecast, tiering projects in terms of gotta do's, would be nice to do's, no, don't bother, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That, a lot of that will be captured. So in the interim, though, I mean, I can certainly get the board some metrics in terms of how many roads we've brought on in the last 10 years, what's the typical cost of those kinds of things?
Not a lot of costs associated with it. It's incremental elements that are, mm-hmm, that's how the elephant's getting here, and mm-hmm, it just needs to be explored. So
well,
we have to ask that question in,
sure,
the TSP.
Sure.
My expectation, if I were on this board for another decade, we are going to meet our maintenance requirements. You set them, mm-hmm, and then you build the portfolio based upon what you expect to be able to maintain. Mm-hmm. And outside of that, you have the hard conversation with developers and the fire protection agencies and everybody else and says, no,
can't do
this
it.
Is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Everything outside of that, it's a very easy conversation to have. It's like a budget for your household. After the money's gone, you just easily say no to that trip to Disneyland because there just isn't anything left.
Well, I think it's a conversation we need to have sometime in the future because we got a long ways away from A2.
Great.
Which is, would you like to move this forward? Is that okay with the board to move it forward on the two stop signs?
Do we have to approve every two stop signs being installed?
It's an order.
Yeah, it's an order. Okay.
I've talked with legal in the not too distant past about coming up with a resolution for the board to delegate some of those lower board things. Yeah, I mean, I can ping them again if that's of interest.
Okay.
These vacations, those kinds
will
of.
Will you be there to make the presentation?
If you really want me to.
Does there need to be a presentation to install two stop signs?
Please no.
I don't think so. If so, I can take care of it.
Larry can do it.
Larry heard there, and he's heard the whole thing, so he doesn't necessarily tell him what to say.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's okay. We'll just go ahead and move that forward, but
sounds good.
I'll give a quick one on that for you.
Can it be consent calendar?
Thank you.
It doesn't even need a presentation on consent calendar?
I don't need a presentation. I think you put it on consent.
Installing two stop signs.
That's what they usually end up.
Let's go to the consent on that.
Cool.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Item B1 is a memorandum of understanding between Josephine County and Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development for resource zone updates. Commissioner Hare will take care of that. He'll be back in here in just a second. Thank you, Rob.
I'm going to fill up my tea since he's filling
and
up
Ted?
His water.
You too.
I like it.
I would imagine public health could probably come up, but I'm not the chair. Whoever's next.
Okay. Commissioner Hare, are you ready for this one?
I am.
Okay. Item B1, and we've already said what it is, Memorandum of Understanding between Jefferson County and Oregon Department of Conservation Development for Resource Zone Updates.
We've already done this once, so I think this was brought to the board to reiterate an existing Memorandum of Understanding that's expired, and so it just needs to be extended at the signature of the chair. It doesn't have to go to a weekly business session. It's just a date extension. It doesn't change the parameters. It's at no cost to the county. It's not a change in policy, and we will ultimately get the product from this and be able to address it with anything we choose to adopt, because it'll be a rural land development code update.
So I'll make a motion that we approve the Memorandum of Understanding with the chair signing on our behalf.
So we've already approved the memorandum.
We've already approved it. This.
I don't know that it.
Just motion to sign it.
Yeah, my guess is extend the deadline. That would be good.
Okay.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to extend the deadline with chair signing. Those in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion carries. Item 2A, Public Health. Michael Weber.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Hello, sir. Quarterly department update.
Quarterly or monthly? What's this going to
be? You're under quarterly, but you're on monthly.
Got it. All right. So before I jump into this, a couple heads-up items. One I kind of came in to give us previously, and it sort of got derailed by RFP, which is understandable. I'm on the docket for next week to discuss the RFP in depth, so I wasn't planning on covering too much on that here. All good? All right, so jumping straight into it, what I'm trying to develop here is a standardized briefing and a consistent template so that when I come in each month, hopefully we can get this trimmed down so that this conversation goes pretty quick. I'm not saying I want to see less of you, but if I could get this down to 5 or 10 minutes each month, that'd be, you know, and see less of you, that'd be great. So what you're looking at here is the first slide covers environmental health, and the left-hand side is revenue and expenditure comparing last year to this year. Ultimately, what I want to get to is comparing what we're at this year, actual, to projected budget. But the budget figures aren't very good at measuring month-to-month actual revenue and expenditure. They're just averaged over the year, so it doesn't provide a very clean picture. So that'll change as we move into the next budget year, hopefully. The only thing of significance on this is you'll notice, first off, July, first month of the fiscal year, is very high. That's because of a carrying forward budget. It makes it difficult to give you a good picture, so I'm going to figure out how to present that differently. And that's consistent across all the different programs. Also, the only thing of real consequence here is November. You'll notice revenue is fairly low for environmental health. That has a consequence for our community, because the reason for that is the money that we're receiving for a business license, or a business food licenses, is not being covered earlier. They're being pushed back, so businesses are paying later. Right now we have about 15 businesses that are actually delinquent on paying for their food license. Now, as much as I appreciate collecting the very high fees that come with that, it's not very good customer service if we're not being proactive about helping them pay on time. So right now we have a mix of businesses. Some say they can't afford the fee. It's around between $150 and $480 a year. Some of them, you get a little bit of the anti-government, you want to come in and inspect me, and sometimes it's just red tape within the business. So we're going to work on a process next year to try and be more proactive about collecting those fees, letting businesses know that they're delinquent, because we're just now becoming aware and they're 2 months late Well, that can be a couple hundred dollars in late fees.
That's an annual fee?
Yes.
Do you have a quarterly payment schedule, anything they can do, or is that just not, that's more headache than it's worth?
At present, we don't. So the 15-ish businesses that are delinquent currently, that's another thing. In previous years, and at the beginning of this year, if you're a business and you come in and you say, I'm late, you know, a guy's been coming by and telling me I need to pay, that's one of our inspectors, he'll come in and go, but I can't afford the fee. Sometimes that gets waived, sometimes it doesn't, and there really isn't good, there's not good reasoning behind when there is and isn't a waive of the late fee.
I understand how that's possible. The board sets fees, they oversee those policies, and
it's not staff's decision to change a policy decision.
I'm on board with you. I just became aware of this. So for this year, I'm pushing it to legal. They're managing all of that for all current delinquent businesses. Next year...
Is the fee reflective of the cost of service, or is there a scale element? I mean, I can imagine a larger restaurant needing more time to inspect, but, you know, a food cart or something is... It is what it is.
There is, but it's by business type. So a warehouse has a different fee than a restaurant. But it's not like...
scalability of
restaurant
inspection.
That restaurant and that restaurant are different sizes.
But same
That's rate. A fixed fee. And I'm not sure if those are established by the state. I'll need to check on that.
But the fine for being late is also a fixed fee. Is that prorated based on the type of business, or is it a flat fee?
I want to say it's a flat fee, but I think there's a couple business categories that have a different fee. But it's around $120 a month.
Fine.
So, $120 a month.
Fine?
Yeah.
For being late.
So, I'm working with legal to come up with a standardized process next year for handling this. The fees are due December 31st. I think it's reasonable for us to apply a grace period around the holidays for a restaurant that just missed it. But we need to have a standardized, it's applied every time in this way.
So we do fees twice a year, and Arthur's in the room now, so that I don't forget, I would be in favor of you making a recommendation for a change of that in June, which is the other time of year we do that,
okay,
to have it implemented in the fall so that people have notice coming in that there's going to be a potential change in something. And so you don't have to wait till our October typical schedule for doing fees. You can do it. And it can apply anytime you want. It doesn't have to apply in July. It can apply in August, October, whenever you want.
Okay. Well, these fees are universally December 31st, so we'll apply them for the upcoming year.
The county's had a goal of having fees done at the end of the year, beginning of the year, just to keep consistent parks is that same way.
Well, it certainly helps us.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we also need a better mechanism for us to reach out and engage businesses when they are delinquent. Because what I don't want is a business to not be aware and all of a sudden be $360 in the hole because of fees, because no one told them, or because they missed a single call. So we're coming up with a solution to that. The upper right-hand corner, the blue, this is my attempt to identify the metrics that are actually important to the board in terms of identifying or outlining the health of the program. So this is where I'd like feedback. If you'd like different figures, if there's different information that you'd like to receive, please let me know.
What I would suggest is you take a look at how planning has reflected their revenues and costs historically by month, and they've been tracking it for 6 years. I put this in place 3 directors ago, and it's served really, really well because they have ebbs and flows, but you can track the trajectory of how they're going to come out at the end of the fiscal year based on, it's just really, really helpful. We can get you a copy of how it's all laid out, and you can take a look at it and see if it would work for you, or this isn't going to, but it seems to work. It works for me. I know that they're on schedule or they're not on schedule, or why they're not on schedule, which month it happened, and how it's all going to work out. It works really well for me.
Okay.
And the program's been keeping it up for, like I said, six years or so. So it's got great historical data that gives context for you and your program and the board.
Okay.
Not a bad idea for parks.
So yeah, the left side we're focusing on the economic component. That upper right we're focusing on operational metrics. So food inspections, we're right around on track. The big difference for this year is water inspections. We normally begin water inspections around March, and we look to do about three a year. These are very large, in-depth. They take weeks of effort, and we don't do a whole lot of them. This year, we're only doing 28. Well, we've already done 15. The reason for that is the individual that's in charge of water inspections, Brad, one of our environmental health specialists, is leaving first week of April. And so he's working to try and get those done ahead of time so that as we transition a new employee in, we'll have time to get them trained up. Because these are very in-depth and time-consuming efforts. So he's been working very hard on that. Violations and alerts are specific issues that arise within water systems. We get notifications from the state on them, and we have to do follow-up. We normally get one to two a year. We got 17 in January. I don't know the reason. We're still trying to figure that out. It's definitely an off-normal. But, yeah, I'll be able to speak to that probably better next month after we've talked to the state.
Makes you question whether the one is just only one or if there were 17 and weren't reported?
No, these are pretty consistent. We get these back in a very timely manner. The state has automated tracking systems that notify us. So there are 53 active. That's over the last 3 years that we have still ongoing. The majority of those, and this could be everything from a restaurant has an E. coli filtration system that's outdated or didn't get tested properly, or they didn't send in a water sample or whatever it is. If we're unable to resolve them, because a lot of times these issues can be very expensive for local businesses. We tell them that they have to install an E. coli filtration system. That could be thousands of dollars out of pocket, which for a small business, as you know, is huge. If we're unable to resolve it locally, these get pushed to the state. That stays on our active docket, so we're unable to close those. So I'm going to find out from the state if we can track those separately.
Is there a state, and it might be a state, it can't be county, but is there a state loan program that says, I need that E. coli filter?
Yes.
And I can't do that. I mean, that's $3,000. Can I borrow that money and pay it back borrow from a state fund?
So the state has a loan program. So there are times where they can provide interest-free loans depending on the nature of the business. We don't have any control over that, but that is available to businesses.
But you do hand them maybe a contact number that they, if you really need to do this, you need to get into compliance. And you don't have the money, but, here's an option for you.
Well, how it works is we work very closely with them, face-to-face, trying to resolve the issue. One of our environmental health specialists will be in their restaurant working with them. And these issues can go on for better than a year. If we're unable to resolve it, it's a handoff to the state. A state representative then begins working with the local business owner.
Yes and no. We're also the enforcement branch of the state.
That's if they're unable to resolve. This is purely during a resolution period. The state does have a point where they go, we can't resolve this, and that's where it comes back to us for enforcement.
Okay.
So, yeah. Current setting topics, we are looking at replacing Brad's position. We're going to have some overlap with that. I'll cover that later. And we're working, I believe everyone's aware, we're working with Klein to develop a solid waste response process. So, I believe that's going to be covered on a later time. Animal shelter, I'm going to ask you to ignore revenue for now. Something was wrong with how the revenues were pulled from the funding codes. So we don't have the levy built into this, so I don't think there's much value in discussing that. So if that's all right, I'd like to jump past that.
Okay.
This is where we have a little bit of trouble identifying good metrics on how to outline the health of the program. So intake versus release, I mean, that's operationally, that's important for the shelter staff. I'm not sure if that's something that's really important to you. I'll try to figure out a better way to visually present that information. But if there's specific metrics you'd like to see every month, please let me know. The big one is probably that top right, dog licenses. I'm not sure where the downfall is. I think we need to look at maybe a public outreach. But you'll notice the light blue line is where we were at last year. The dark blue is where we're at this year. We're consistently under every month for this fiscal year on getting dog licenses in place. So either we did a great job last year and people were proactive and all dog licenses are active, or we need to figure out why we're being less successful at engaging the public.
Do you have a list of features and benefits to getting your dog license, or you know, if you don't get your dog license, this is what happens, but if you do get your dog license, this is what it, you know, some of the benefits of having your dog licensed?
The benefit is you're in compliance with state law, and you're not getting fined.
Yeah, I was going to say,
that simple?
You're not breaking the law. That's kind of like the benefit of not speeding, you know.
Is it a downturn in the dog population?
I don't believe so. We're remaining pretty consistent on numbers. In terms of intake, we aren't going down year to year. So the number of dogs in the county is definitely remaining consistent or going up.
I think that would be a good
metric.
Somehow, you have to say, well, the reason it's going down is you can't license more dogs than you have. If you don't have the dogs to license, the number would go down with the number. Yeah.
So. Is there any reporting by veterinarian offices or anything as far as how many patients, or is that a HIPAA thing? Or
no, there's no reason that'd be restricted. I can look at how
intake.
We can measure that.
It's just intake. How many do we have in there? Are all of them getting licensed? I mean, if all of them are getting licensed, we're not putting any down, and
well,
those are the number of licenses. You're talking about licenses, not
yes.
adoptions, and I miss that. That's where I messed
all right.
up. So scratch all of that.
Yeah, the dog licenses are dogs in the community.
And a dog license is one time. It's not like a
it's
car.
Every year.
No.
It's every
well,
year.
We do
oh
have
my God,
two.
Okay.
We can do every two now.
Yeah.
So we can do two.
You can
licenses.
Actually do up to three, can't you?
Yes.
With the rabies, it's just a matter of you don't want to do the 3 year. It's only as long as your rabies license is good for. So.
Mm-hmm.
It was every year, and now they've put a cost savings in for a 3 year if you do it.
Yeah, you get a little bit of a discount if you pay years in advance, and that's less processing for us. So,
how long is a rabies vaccination good for? 3 years?
Yes. So I can't put in for a 3 year dog license right now because my dog's rabies license is expired in a year.
In a year, okay.
But next year when I get her rabies updated, I can get the 3 year license.
Get the 3 year. That's kind of along the line of a car registration.
Yeah, it's easier for the residents.
All roads lead back to a car.
It does. That's part I understand. I don't own a dog. I register my dog. But I register my car. Who doesn't eat when I'm not using it? Anyway, go ahead.
I'm sorry. It was a good one.
So I'll work on the metrics for the animal shelter. Some standing topics. Shelter versus ACO levy assignment. Currently, we have one bucket, and that's the numbers on the numbers that would be on the left are a combination of both shelter and ACO funding and expenditure. So, next fiscal year, we're going to work on figuring out how to parse those out because I think it's important to paint those pictures with two different brushes. Reassignment funding. So. A significant portion of the funding from the levy was reassigned to the new ACO position. That is something that has an impact. We definitely support it. Even Laura at the shelter says it made a lot of sense to do that, but it's affecting our long-term funding considerations. A fairly big one, and this is something that Commissioner Morgan is well aware of.
It's on the agenda today to appoint those two.
Yes. So the shelter advisory board vacancies, we currently have three active out of eight, I believe.
Seven.
So we're missing four of seven positions. I've gotten conflicting reports as to what a quorum is, but we can talk about that offline.
Mm-hmm. But two of them will be there today for recommendation that will get us to a quorum. And they're actively recruiting the vet or vet tech vacancy when Dr. Buckmaster passed away, and he also had kind of filled the shoes of large animal representative, which isn't a requirement in our bylaws, but it was a necessary representation to have there. So they're also reviewing the bylaws to see if they can make a recommendation for us to kind of change the makeup of the group. But it is something that we're kind of... Dr. Buckmeister's wife was also a member at large, and so she's no longer there as well. So it kind of was a double vacancy at once. And so anyhow, we're building it back up.
A very big one. I actually forgot to add this. So we have a number of legal holds in the shelter, and these aren't an issue for us. They take up space that we don't have. We're consistently hitting our capacity, particularly for dogs, and we aren't even in the summer yet. What we've been
legal
doing...
Legal holds defined as a dog who has...
An active dog bite or dog versus livestock case. And we're not getting those processed very quickly.
How do you clear those?
So I'm working with legal right now to come up with a standardized process for what we do, what reports have to be done. Because currently we get a dog in the shelter and the dog sits there and sits there. And we've had dogs there for months. And what I get back from Laura right now is, so what should I do about this dog? You know, is there anything I should be doing? Like, is there anything information you need from me? So we're coming up with a standardized list of here's the information that either the board or
you're consistent.
Yeah.
Hearings officer.
Thank you. Hearings officer. What's the information that they need? And we're coming up with essentially a two-page sheet. ACO report on the incident. Shelter report on the health and welfare of the dog. Was it being cared for? Was it healthy? Does it have heartworm? A shelter report on what's the temperament of the dog. Has it been socialized with other animals? Has it socialized with humans? Does it show any temperamental
you can
issues?
All of that.
Hmm?
Yeah, that's great.
Go faster.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all needs to be done. It sounds outrageous because the cost is being assigned to the person who owns the dog for the issue not coming before the hearings officer or a board in timely fashion.
And we're not even being notified there's dogs in the hold.
Nope, didn't even know it.
Yeah.
And my concern is, do you go back to the person who owns the dog and says, you know, your bill's up to X number of dollars? And she goes, I'm not ever going to. Do what you want with the dog or whatever.
That's not being probably communicated.
Would they draw?
Legal's not letting you know or whatever. It just sounds terrible.
Well, yeah, we need a process determined sooner than later because if there's dogs in the hold,
checkpoints,
haven't had one come to us in a year.
Yeah. So we're working with legal. We're going to have a standardized process. And every time a dog comes in, it'll go quick.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for bringing it up because I think it's news to all three of us and of concern
to you.
Well,
we brought it up the other day. He's like, can we release the dog? I'm like, well, what's the law say? And, you know, so we'll come up with a recommendation soon.
I'll skim by a little quicker. Next slide is just, you've seen this before, it's the map of the shelter location. We're looking at a 10-year master plan. There has been talk of moving the facility. I don't know about viability. I'm not even sure how to approach that because that's a pretty big deal.
There's concerns about having the animals housed directly across from the airport, and as the airport's economic activity increases, that it's more distressing on the animals to have the noise that close to them.
We're going to work on a master facilities plan. I wasn't aware this was an issue, and we can include it in that investigation about probably moving it. It makes sense. It was just put there because it was convenient. We own property there, but that's not what may be best for the community long term.
We have $26,000 earmarked for assessing that location for long-term improvements. We may want to revisit using that.
It's an outrageous amount of money to just do an assessment.
It's more than just the assessment.
Well, let's just hold off on that. Roll it into the master evaluation. Because if the master evaluation says it shouldn't be there, then save the money.
Okay. Then we'll put it towards a plan of what the location should be.
Put it towards
so we're not spending that money twice.
All right. Clinical services funding, we're down a little bit. That's to be expected. The reason for that is, as the RFP considerations were coming in, and there was a little bit of uncertainty with clinical staff as to where they would be, if they would be, they ramped down a little bit in terms of taking on new clients because a lot of their clients are long-term and reoccurring. So the figures are down a bit for them. Exclusions are coming up. That's going to be a fairly big deal. We have not been getting many people in for vaccinations this week. Next week is exclusion, so we're expecting a pretty hefty and, let's say, rushed week. But that's critical because it can delay students going back to school. So that'll be important.
So at one point I had asked for a report previous to you being here about clinical services, and so then the immunizations was kind of here, clinical was separate. And I know they've done a good job of, somebody comes in for WIC, they kind of run them through the clinical gamut now.
Yep.
Or gauntlet, rather, whatever the right word is. But at one point in that report, it was showing in a month there was maybe 10 visits to the clinic. Or, you know, now 1 month for immunizations, you had 200-300 people because they're getting ready for school. But then the next few months are 10 some people. So that was part of the evaluation of, or should we be doing the RFP? Should we be doing privatization for having this many employees for 10 people in a month? So I'm looking at your numbers here, and it seems like it's greater than that. But that's something I'd like to see a follow-up on those numbers as far as how many people are being served in the clinic, how much is for immunizations, how much is for this and that, and just kind of cost evaluation of where we're at.
And specifics for patient throughput. Yeah, I can get those.
And if we didn't supply that, who would?
Correct.
I mean, if you don't...
Immunizations are... There's a whole other talk here.
Yeah, right, okay. That's a much, much, much longer talk.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
The only other thing I'll point out here is partnerships. So we worked with Juvenile Facility, Mr. Goodwin. We're going to start providing a lot of the services that we have at Public Health to their residents, both in detention and in the housing component. A lot of these are kids that haven't had those services before, so we're going to look at how we can go about getting people over periodically to provide, services to the people that need them. And financially, it makes sense on a lot of fronts. And also with the schools, we've been partnering with the schools to help support them on their new sex education requirements. If you haven't read about those, I recommend you look into them.
Will you send them out? Send them out, please.
The new sex ed requirements for the schools?
If you want us to read them.
Just to her.
Yeah.
Sure, I can do that. Parent-child health, this includes things like home visiting nurses, the cocoon, Babies First, and WIC. There's not a whole lot to cover here except for one area of concern. We are missing the target on our WIC caseload. We're supposed to maintain a caseload of 97 to 103%, so 100% of the targeted caseload that the state provides to us, give or take 3%. We're around 86, I believe. So we're low. We've been short-staffed. We're going to try and make up for it at the end of the year to try and overcorrect.
And you have two potential hires coming aboard that will help with the staffing, correct?
Yes. We're reviewing one of them now, but one is already slotted to come on board. So that'll help. That's all a staffing issue. Facility concerns, we do have an old building. We're struggling with managing the heating well. I don't think that's on facilities. It's just how the building's structured. And we've also been having problems with rats and mice getting into some of our stock room. So facilities is on it, but it's an ongoing concern. And
skipped one bullet point.
I'll touch that one at the end.
Okay.
I'll put it in two places. Emergency preparedness, not a whole lot to talk through here. Finance and expenditure are fairly consistent with last year. We're a little bit lower on expenses. Probably the big thing that you may not be aware of is we do quite a few classes. So Luann Redding, who is our emergency preparedness coordinator, holds classes with the public. Over the last 3 months, she's held 4 courses. I sat in on one of them. It was phenomenal. Even though it's the same material that she's held in the past, she's had people come back to repeat. And she's had 95 participants from the public over the last 3 months in these courses. So we may look at how we can maybe expand and hold more of those. They're excellent. The one I sat in on was the child care facility. It's called COOP, Continuity of Operations. And it's about how do we get help them get back up and running quickly following a disaster, because that's critical for the community. We have a couple conferences coming up, but that's not too critical. One thing I left off was our ChemPAC. So we have a ChemPAC that's a federal program sponsored by the CDC. In the event of, say, a biological attack, we have emergency stockpile of medication and such on hand.
It's under secret location?
Yep. We're going to look at reviewing that location.
Okay.
And that's about it. Special topics, RFP briefing is going to be coming up next week in executive session. And the state audit, which I've mentioned to all of you in the past, the state audit is it's going to take a while to get results back. We're probably looking at 3 to 4 months before we have any firm answers in terms of where we're at and how we did.
Okay.
And the last page is our current staffing. I know that it's going to be covered by Commissioner Morgan and later this afternoon in terms of goals. One of my biggest goals is getting staffing back up to where it needs to be. I'd like to see our staffing at 90%. We're around 69. Each of the red boxes on that last page is vacant, and the yellow or orange has given notice. So, yeah, we're short-staffed. I covered a lot. I'd like to turn this into a very quick briefing in the future. Anything you'd like different? Different set of information, different metrics?
We'll let you know.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good to see your voice back.
Yeah. Constantly feeling like it's about to crack, but it's still here.
Pretty convenient.
No.
It's timing is everything.
Do you have any idea how many people in this community have walked up to me?
I'm sure.
And find it absolutely hilarious.
It's totally ironic.
Yeah. Yes.
Item 2B is Park, Sarah.
Morning, Commissioners. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? Sarah Wright with us this morning.
Parks update. Things are going well over in Parks, which has just been an increasing story since I've been here, so that's great. As of today, our revenues are up still to the tune of about $60,000 if you're comparing apples to apples this time last year. It really comes down to more camping nights, more people paying for their day use fees, more people buying annual passes, and so it's great. We're just enforcing fees that are owed to us. In the past, there's been a lot of people not paying for the services incurred, so our rangers are right on top of checking fee boxes, making sure camping nights are being paid for, day use fees, our citation program's going well. So it's really helping us continue to grow as a department and is what we'll be covering all the staffing additions that I've made within the past year. So currently we're hiring staffing. We're bringing in an additional ranger. We're filling an opening with a position and a coordinator as we bring in camping reservations in-house. So that's really exciting. We, Commissioner Harris signed a contract. We're just doing a one-year agreement with our new software company. We pay by month, so it's really just a service. They come highly recommended from Jackson County. We hope by probably mid-April that the camping reservations will be live right in our office, so it'll be a great way to make sure when people call to book a campsite that we are securing that reservation and they're not ending up with a state park or some other location. So it'll be a great thing. Other than that, we've got a lot of projects going out in the field. If you follow us on social media at all, you might have seen some of them, but we are insulating yurts, putting up clean air walls, we're building large decks and making sure they're ADA compliant. Our goal is to make them a little bit better and much easier to clean. With raw exposed plywood as floor, we haven't been able to mop or clean those properly, so we're fixing that currently. And then in the next fee batch, we're going to be requesting to increase fees for yurts to $60 a night, up from $40. The reason why is we want to price ourselves out of this downtown hotel pricing to help make sure we're only attracting recreational users and not people that just need a cheap place to stay for the night. So that was kind of a strategic move on our part. We are looking at a bunch of different grants coming up over the next 6 months to try to proceed with funding the White Horse Project and get that unused tent camping turned into high demand full hookup sites. Mm-hmm. So that one will be just something you continue to hear about as time goes on and as we can secure funding. Lake Selmec is a big topic as well from the public with the lake weed, with the need for dredging. We are doing our best to try to analyze all different views and different ways that that needs to be fixed, and we will be coming to some conclusions soon.
I didn't have a chance to talk to the governor about it.
Okay.
It was one of those things that she wanted to know reports from us on what we've done with past projects.
Okay.
So unfortunately, but we are going to be bringing up the Lake Selmec as part of Regional Solutions as a potential project.
Awesome.
So
That's huge.
Something that we want to support. Josephine Parks Foundation was also singing your praises as far as just the effort that you're increasingly engaging them as a nonprofit trying to assist. And they mentioned trying to help come alongside. I know their numbers are not very high, high dollar amounts, but they were impressed with what you're trying to do at Lake Selmec as well. But
awesome.
Yeah.
And water's been a consistent issue at Regional Solutions that's been well-funded mm-hmm. in Jackson County. Water issues more so around efficiencies in irrigation, but there's probably, you know, environmental things, and I think the dam, all of that works really, really well with being a comprehensive.
Yeah, the conversation was brought up regarding water with Commissioner Kevin Cameron from Marion County bringing up their project, and the bigger concerns with drought coming into play, and Klamath region, Lake County and Klamath had brought that to the governor's attention. So it was right on the forefront of her attention, so the timing would be right to probably have you also be speaking with Kevin Campbell at Regional Solutions as far as...
you package it.
Yes, what's the best way to get that going to see about getting some money? There's only $4 million statewide this year, however... Why not try to go for all of it?
I agree. So, thank you so much.
Regional appropriation, so it's about $700,000. But there's no reason why historically there's been a lot of allocation to Jackson County. It's only been about $300,000 or $400,000 that's come to Josephine County in the last two rounds, which is 4 years. So, you're well poised to work together with Commissioner Morgan, who's liaison, to get that.
On the dredging, is there a Fish and Wildlife aspect to that?
ODFW supports our need for dredging as well as removing lakeweed, especially with the last die-off in bass that we saw. There would be huge advantages to releasing cooler water through the dam to the downstream outlet, to allowing fish passage through the dam itself. But they support the dredging, making it deeper for water quality reasons. And so they are helping us reach out to other agencies just to figure out ABC what needs to be done to get permission from them all. So we have had good communications in the past couple months. You know, we have a quick fix where we can drag the lake and just sweep off all of the milfoil to make it usable for this spring and summer. Doing that's going to fall to the bottom and resprout and create a worse issue. But the real solution is going to be dredging, making it deeper so it can't continue to grow on top of other things. So
challenges that I've heard is when they dug that, there could be cars down there. There's still stumps that don't rot as well underwater. The wood stops rotting when it gets
preserved.
So it could be. It's nothing simple. No.
Yeah, very complicated.
Okay. do we need to encourage some diving training and see what's down there?
Yeah, I definitely think that could happen. They can hand pull the aquatic weeds while they're down there, too. So we'll talk to search and rescue.
Master gardeners.
I think it's about 210 acres of water if you're going to calculate that. Yeah.
We need you to weed the bottom of Master gardeners.
Interesting project. We're doing trail inventory right now. Oregon State Parks is putting a focus on improving trails. It's highest demand for Oregon recreation. So we're identifying things like Pierce Riffle, which is completely outgrown or overgrown. It's unusable. White Horse Park, which has just kind of grown in over time. We'll be working on some plans to get those trails back up and usable. Other than that, that's kind of a nutshell. Does anyone have questions about parks?
I got a tour of parks yesterday, didn't I?
You did. You came down and saw us. Thank you so much.
Yep. First time I've been out to that building in 14 months, and it was interesting.
Yeah.
Parks and Forestry.
Small, cozy place.
I need you to put on the executive session an update on White Horse water system. I don't know where that's at, and I don't think you do either, or if you do, you can talk about if it's outside of.
Was it Indian
the
Mary?
Indian, Indian Mary Indian Water Plant?
Yeah. What did I say?
Ah,
you said Bardo down Indian Mary.
Sure. I received a call from Mr. Wally Hicks about 2 weeks ago that said something to the effect of it has
that
been
date right now.
Yeah.
Well, not right
as long
now.
As it's not.
It's really short.
Liability. I mean, if it's not discussing any kind of litigation, you can't.
He said that you guys didn't support going into litigation and doing a lawsuit.
We so probably should get on an executive session.
Okay,
yeah,
sure.
All right.
Well, we haven't been updated in months, and so I appreciate you reaching out on that issue. And then part of, well, it's all parks, because the land that I'm looking to try to transfer into our portfolio is all recreation-based. There's an element of FLIPMA, that Federal Land Policy Management Act, that provides for the transfer of lands for recreation, improve recreational opportunities. And so there's about 8 properties that are listed in. I've been there, and I've got a meeting with DeFazio and Walden's office to help spur that deal. It's not limited to, but there's White Horse Park. It's got the boat ramp and some trails areas is owned by BLM. Hog Creek Boat Ramp parking area. Wildlife Images is a different one. It's not a recreational deal, but they have been working for almost a decade on trying to renew a lease agreement with the BLM on part of their property that is owned by the BLM. It'd be a real easy conversation for us to get done in a week. They've been working on it for almost a decade. And so there's also...
Are you asking BLM to give that up to Wildlife
county,
Images?
No, to the county.
To the county.
They can't give it to Wildlife Images, okay. But they can give it to us.
Give it to us.
We enter into a lease agreement with them that takes 7-10 days, and it's done. Okay. Very simple. So there are others, but they're all for recreational, proving the opportunity for her to manage her portfolio. Lake Selmec is a big one.
And I will send you that email by the end of tomorrow with
okay, great.
My list. Sorry about that delay.
Not at all. That's all I had.
Awesome.
Great job. Excellent presentation at the State of the County.
Thank you.
Really anything else for Sarah?
Great idea to have it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have a staff person you want to
because this
support?
Is Mercedes. Yeah, she's say. New. I wanted her to just kind of come see how these things run. So she started last Monday.
Great.
Unfortunately, Sarah, who started about 3 weeks ago, is going to have to put in her notice. Her last day will be next Friday. Her mother has some health issues, so she needs to move home to help her.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Next up, item 2C, quarterly department update, juvenile justice. Mr. Goodman,
good morning.
Step up.
Don't envy the meeting schedule of the county commissioners.
I mean, you were just subjected to it.
As well, I mean, just one part of it, and one in the week. But good morning. So I understand that, well, first off, I had some several unsolicited positive feedbacks about Mr. Kane's presentation at the State of the County.
Yeah.
And I worked with him on some of the, you know, just basics of that. I know a 5-minute presentation goes by so quickly. But, yeah, I was really happy with that. And really just to dovetail with that where we are, the biggest piece of information I have, we cleared finally the probably the largest red tape hurdle with the state with our licensing for a residential program yesterday.
Good.
We had our final site visit, and we have our letter of compliance in hand today. And so we can actually start taking youth into that program. Well, really today, as you know, we have our OIA contract in place. We have the Department of Human Services contract in the queue with legal right now. So I'll be coming to you in the next week to 2 weeks with that contract. Very similar to the Oregon Youth Authority one. And then, but probably more importantly, we're able to actually right now, we can start taking Josephine County youth. So youth from our probation department or youth that are in need that are not necessarily connected with those two agencies. So we're up and going with that. Really excited about that. It was part of the frustration with, just to explain that month difference in, so we opened our detention center on the 16th of January, and part of, ironically, in the great wisdom sometimes of government, part of your licensing process is the review of credentials, backgrounds, extensive backgrounds, all of these things with your staff, and if you don't have staff, they can't do that, and so we had to hire and get everybody through the process before they could really start their month-long process with staff. So if we didn't have a detention center to open and give these folks some things to do, it would have been a really unfortunate situation where you really had to hire 20 or so people and not have much to do until the state can do what they need to do with it. So not all that efficient in my mind, but in our situation, we did have the detention center, which is up and going. We've met with Oregon State Police, the Sheriff's Office, and Grants Pass Department of Public Safety initially about our new policies and what they can expect from us. And that is basically a bring any and all youth for any law violation or criminal activity to the juvenile department now. Let us be to figure out what is the best to do with these kids. Now, at the same time, that's a learning experience because I would say all but maybe one or two patrol folks that are on right now, there's only one or two of them that were on 5.5 years ago when we were open before. Mm-hmm. So the normal for almost all law enforcement out in the community on patrol is hand a youth a citation, say come to court. And whether they did or not in the past was, you know, up for grabs. But so there's ongoing communication, and we're really trying to retrain. I wouldn't say retrain, but refocus law enforcement that we're now open for business. So please bring us the referrals, and those I anticipate will really start to pick up as we get ready with our final contracts for the residential side. I would expect a waiting list for that program within the first month. I mean, the need there is way up here. It's what we're hearing from DHS and everyone else. So,
can you speak to the need of the relationship between the school resource officers and referrals, or the conversations the schools have been having with you in relation to referrals into our system?
Yeah, I can. That is and has been one of the greatest frustrations, really, for the county schools. I can speak. I mean, not for them, but I've had principals in my office extremely frustrated and saying, you know, help me. What can we do? Really, for the more minor possession charges, we get a steady stream of those from Grants Pass School District. They have an active SRO, mostly from the high school. Sadly, the last year, we're getting more and more middle school referrals for possession of marijuana, especially. But we've had, I wouldn't say zero in the last 4 or 5 years, but you could probably count on one hand the referrals that have actually made it to juvenile justice from the county schools. And these are hopefully the school resource officer that's on, I guess, in the queue with the sheriff's office will go a long way in that. But the bottom line is we can't serve those kids with our programming if they don't come to us. The only way they can come to us is through a law enforcement referral. I've had conversations with county legal, the district attorney, and trying to get creative in ways that maybe the school could refer directly to us. But all of our power as a county juvenile department comes from that referral from a DPSST sworn peace officer. And there's just no way to get around that. So we're very excited at the idea that we can, especially with the capacity now, with the facility, bring us the kids, and hopefully the sheriff could, as he ramps up and gets that position, not only I would say that position on, but maybe the ability to respond to other issues. I can say, I have nothing written down, but I can say that I know personally of numerous would-be reports that just don't happen anymore because school officials are very frustrated. And they know that, you know, it might go into the system or whatever, an email.
Do you know when that school resource officer is going to be hired? I mean, do you know?
I have no idea.
The sheriff submitted an opinion piece. It was posted on Facebook this last week that he's not going to do this school resource officer until 2019. And I don't know why that decision was made. It's not.
I feel like there's a little bit of a disconnect. And we appropriated funds for a marijuana person, and he's got the liberty to kind of tweak that a little bit. But he doesn't have the discretion to say that he's not going to use those funds until 2019. The board did it months ago. Mm-hmm. So there either needs to be a reappropriation of those funds to some other entity that we could contract with, or I don't know. Those are just weird disconnects. So if
well,
you don't mind following
and up. Thinking through, if it's not happening, what do we need to do? Because we are not providing the service to the county schools that they need, asking for help.
And the funds are there.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I would like to petition this teachers union to supply money for the schools.
We have money set aside for a position that's not being used.
You might do it in addition or whatever.
But I just, you know, it's we always say we need money for the schools, and yet we have an entity out there that collects a lot of money from the teachers and then just takes it to do other things.
That's a different topic. We have money set aside to pay for a position mm-hmm. that's not getting filled.
Well, why isn't it?
And why isn't it?
Correct.
So let's have that conversation.
In light of what happened in Florida,
I'm sure there's a reasonable explanation.
You know, why isn't there a short circuit from the school and everybody says, hey, because everybody in Florida said, we knew this was coming. But why wasn't it referred? Because it wasn't referred by law enforcement?
Yeah. So just as a heads up, I have an 11 o'clock.
Okay.
So, and that is.
Great. Okay. Are we all done? Yeah. Any other questions
any,
for Mr.
Any
Goodman?
Questions for me? I will keep, as we get the residential going, I'll keep in contact. And
okay.
Be happy to come back, in a couple of months and give you a report when we're really cooking on all eight.
Thank you.
I will follow up with you on some other things as well.
Great. Thank you.
Item 3, finance report and business update from Arthur O'Hare.
I've invited Ryan to join us. No, he invited us.
Okay. We've got one thing that we thought under the finance update would work fairly well, and that's with following up on what the board had 2 weeks ago. Or
When I did my last update, I was asked to give some prices in regards to court security, or not for the courts, but for the county, to have an outside agency do some patrol. And so I've got some bids back, and it's right around $25 an hour to have an outside agency come in and spend the day here. We can set up whatever route we want them, whatever buildings, and they'll be assigned to the county.
That's $200 a day? Are they going to be an 8-hour?
Yeah, they want us to pay for their lunch and stuff as well, so we'll have to negotiate that piece. But other than that, yeah.
And I think it's reasonable to say that they, if they're going to hire somebody or sign somebody, they want some level of assurance that they're going to be, paid in a adequately to cover that person for the month. It can't be, we'll just use them today, not for the next five. And so there's kind of a 30 days in there?
30 days.
So they want to know, are we going to keep this person around for the, for the month? Because mm-hmm. otherwise it'd be very difficult to find somebody, hire somebody, and give them that commitment that, you're going to get a job. You're going to get a full-time job.
Did we ask anything about it? I thought we also asked about the notification system and getting that upgraded. Is there any bids for that?
Let's figure this one out first, and then we can go into that because you guys all got a letter from Judge Baker, and he has a drafted response. Just in the last couple of weeks, we've had situations in that one bathroom where people are doing stuff that is not, water running down the stairs.
Right.
It's just the things that you talk about. The nexus for me is what's the cost benefit of not having it done through the sheriff's office? There's also a union component to mm-hmm. potentially supplanting an actual position. So
well, this is not an existing position, so there shouldn't be.
So calling it courtroom security is probably not appropriate, but courthouse security would be more accurate. County security would be more accurate.
That way, pretty broad.
Because courtroom security, they're monitoring the access to the courtrooms, whereas we're talking the whole building.
And not just this building, it could be other
yeah.
buildings.
Yeah, and I thought we might want to look at the actual hours that we have them, because maybe we want to have a gap somewhere to make sure they're here after hours when staff is leaving. They're patrolling, walking the parking lots, those type of things.
Well, let's draw up a scope of work, number of hours that you want, and have that negotiation started with the contractor, and then you bring us back a recommendation and a contract that we're ready to go. But I think you've got the endorsement of the board to move forward.
I think it's a good idea.
And yeah. Arthur and I can work as a facilities cost where that money's coming from mm-hmm. for the duration of the rest of the fiscal year, and then how we're paying for it if it's successful right. into the future.
Yeah. I like the looking into the split shift type thing, you know, for maybe an hour while employees are leaving, especially in the wintertime. They're going out to the parking lot and whatnot.
Well, another question is, do you need them at 8 a.m.?
Right.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
I just had them give us a bid for a straight 8 hours, yeah. and then I can.
But maybe 10 to 6.
But is that 9 to 6 yeah. or 10
nine
to 6?
Yeah.
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 Right.
Great. We'll work that out.
Okay.
Nice. Then the other issue is, Ryan, I asked him to work on a response to Judge Baker's, and it's good that you're here because you're liaison to court security.
And our meeting's this afternoon. Mm-hmm.
And so he's held off on submitting that to the court security committee, and I think that's a wise recommendation. But there are some recommendations in his letter, some of which I think was a really good one. It's probably board words. That there's a checkoff by everybody before one of those drills is done, that Ryan's office has had a chance to say, yes, it is ready to go, and everybody's been trained appropriately, but it just reveals some inconsistent information, and we're asking it to do something that it isn't ready to do. I think that the board should probably field, through the court security committee, get a recommendation to invest some money in an actual right system. And we're asking it to do stuff. We're asking him to do stuff for a system that isn't his, that he didn't put in, or it isn't going to do what we want it to do the way we want it to do it. And it's no surprise that it's not giving us the outcome.
Yeah. You want an expectation of an outcome of something wasn't designed to do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
then frustrated it didn't do what it wasn't meant to do.
Let's get the right system put in place. That's what I would like to see.
Yeah. And we're using the fire alarm system for evacuation for all types of evacuation, which it's not really meant to do. So
my charge would be that we have a consistent system throughout the entire justice and courthouse that serves the needs of what the court security would like to test for. And I think it's fire and it's active shooter or whatever those other drills are. But
your reaction would be way different to a fire to an active shooter.
Yeah, and then
fire alarm goes off and I'm not going to barricade myself in the office. Mm-hmm. But active shooter alarm goes off, yes, I will.
So yeah, maybe that's let's have you guys work on that and then give us a recommendation. So that would be my
great. We'll follow up after our meeting today. Or?
Okay.
Sure. Anything else for Arthur?
She should have a chance to look at your draft response. And
yeah,
maybe
I'll send it.
Yeah.
You bet.
Great.
Okay. Anything else?
I thought it looked good.
The only thing I wanted to just mention is an NVIP wastewater treatment. We met with potential vendors. The group that looked at and we want to offer that to the Ball Foster folks. That was kind of the consensus of the group. So I have that in with legal right now, and at some point it will come out of legal and be presented to the board in the form of a contract.
Great.
So great, for project management of the wastewater treatment.
Thank you very much.
Okay. That's all I have.
Okay. See you this afternoon.
Yes.
Anything else? Okay. Mm-hmm. Under other business, item number 4, any other matters that come before the board?
I have 210 Tacoma is an issue that I think is in facilities right now, and then it will go into property management. The property manager is being hired and should start on the 26th of February. We had agreed in the interim that Ryan would be working on getting a certificate of occupancy. I think we want to do that. I've already heard when Southern Oregon Aviation was looking into it, they want them to fill out a full-fledged development permit. And I'm like, absolutely not. There's no reason for a development permit when the change of use is less impactful than what they were doing previously. And this just exposes one more thing in building and safety and planning that is a big concern. I've got a page of issues that I want to address with our planning community development director, but circumstances as they are, I haven't been able to. So if you wouldn't mind moving forward and Well, there's not much there.
They've done some of the steps as well at Southern Oregon Air Academy.
He's been.
Do you want me to touch base with building and safety? Because typically I wouldn't touch base with them unless we were doing any kind of renovation. Since we're not renovating,
why
I typically wouldn't even.
We're not renovating.
Pull a permit or
no,
any of those
there
things.
Isn't. But I would, you do have to do something in order to get a certificate of occupancy. So whatever that looks like, if it's testing the fire alarm, which you've already scheduled or
yeah,
have done.
And that's the route I was going to go, is deal with the fire marshal rather, or whether it be state or local,
right,
and make sure they sign off. And then I believe that's how we did our certificate at juvenile.
Whatever it takes.
And maybe just coordinate with that group that they
to go
you're not
open
redoing.
Juvenile again.
Yeah.
Right.
With the city, obviously, because that's in the city limits.
Right.
So you have the authority of the board to say, we're not doing a development permit. We're not asking for special treatment. This should be the way it works.
Yeah.
So just whatever it takes to be turnkey for the prospective lessor, that's what we're looking to do. We don't want new walls, new paint, no nothing.
Don't want to
just
start all over.
Ready to go. Right. And if the keys all need, we've been holding off on doing that.
Right.
I don't want them to have to come in and try to figure out now how to, which key to, whatever. Well, maybe they should do that.
At least if they have an idea of what they're looking for.
Yes.
So we don't key it and it doesn't work for them. Levels of key.
I have heard that they wanted the board to entertain the option of renovating something for caretaker space that's outside the 15 beds or whatever it is.
It would have been taking a couple of the rooms at the end.
And I agree. I don't like that.
Yeah.
But that's not on us. You get the facility like you get the facility. If you want to tweak it,
then they can get their
tweak it
that would definitely tip off the,
but maybe just coordinate with them so you're not redoing what they've already done.
Sure.
As far as the checklist for the occupation.
Okay,
we'll work on that.
Okay. Yeah, I believe they've been in contact with Mark. Mm-hmm. There, so I'll touch base with them anyway.
Good.
Just to make sure we're clear.
Okay.
All
right. Anything else for Ryan?
No,
I sent you an email.
Okay.
To see about a space for a contractor that works with one of the departments that contacted me for a safety concern.
Oh,
and
okay.
So I forwarded it to you just to see what you thought, and Wally, because of the property side of it, but just as a heads up, that's there.
How much space were they?
Not much. I was actually thinking the old Silvo office.
Great, yeah.
Because somebody could see what's going on through the window. That's the main issue is they used to use space in community corrections for polygraph. Now they're using an off-site, and the individuals are violent offenders who are getting aggressive.
Okay.
And so she wants to be in a location where somebody can see, so there's a safety component. She seat is cleared.
Okay.
So it's one of those things, because she was in-house. I had her fingerprinted and all that, and they do the seat screening. So that's why I thought the civil office, because then you have a records component that can hit an alarm and call for Popo. And then an exterior lobby, they can wait in the lobby as they're waiting. So
yeah, I'm not certain on, the more I think about civil, is PD might be using that space. They might have added that to their space.
Okay.
But something over there, we have empty space. We have a squad room, the old sheriff's squad room that's on the back side of records. There's multiple.
The main thing is just, it was a safety component so that somebody else is nearby.
Got some eyes on it.
Yeah.
What's going on?
And generally speaking, they have the door shut, but just as an option of what is appropriate. So, I mean, if our answer is we don't have space, that's our answer. But I wanted to make sure that I'm not promising anything. I'm not offering anything. I'm asking you if there's a possibility.
And I'll just give you some options and costs, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. Anything else for Ryan?
No, thank you.
Seeing that, any other matters before the board? If not, I would like to move number 5, which is looks like it's got about 4 presentations to this afternoon, so Commissioner Morgan can do her 11 o'clock.
It's only one. I recommend us moving to the consent calendar resolution 2018-007.
I second that.
Okay. And that's item 5A.
5B and C, they're the same
thing. They're the same thing.
Okay.
It was mostly just letting you know the status of our advisory committee.
And we've already done A.
So that's moved that to consent?
Yeah.
We've already done 5A.
So we don't actually need to code. My apologies.
Codify it?
Correct.
No, we already did that.
We're fine.
Okay.
So A's done. B and C are the same thing.
The two recommendations are two people that have been active volunteers, donors, animal welfare, great recommendations. We're okay. Still looking to fill the last two.
So those are okay?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And matters from Commissioner D, and I'll move that to this afternoon because I've got a little slight presentation for that okay. Nate wanted to bring forward. Okay. So we'll move 5D to this afternoon with that.
So we should continue the meeting to 2 o'clock this afternoon?
No, we can handle it under other.
Okay.
Can we just put it under other this afternoon?
Okay.
With that, anything else?
No, thank you.
We're adjourned at 10:59.